Hi, I'm Jack Morrison. I'm a freshman at Sacred Heart University. Today, I will be interviewing Sacred Heart's Collegiate Recovery Program staff on the dangers of gambling and what high schoolers should look out for when choosing their college. First, we'll talk to James Geisler, the Executive Director of Student Wellness at Sacred Heart. Next, we'll talk to Kathy Katz, an Administrative Associate and Special Projects Coordinator at Sacred Heart. And finally, we'll talk to Brian Dolan, the Collegiate Recovery Program Coordinator at Sacred Heart. Please enjoy. Could you introduce yourself to us and tell us your title?
Sure. My name is James. I am the Executive Director of Student Wellness here at Sacred Heart University.
Cool. Why is addiction support so important to Sacred Heart University?
That's a really good question. We know that there's a lot of substance misuse on college campuses nationwide, and we think it's really important to offer addiction support and recovery support to students, as we can't deny the fact that there's substance misuse everywhere and overuse, and we want to be able to offer a pathway for students who don't choose that route or who have abused substances and are now in the recovery stage, or maybe they're sober curious and they're using substances but want to be a little bit more knowledge-based on what recovery avenues there are and what options there are for recovery in the university setting.
Okay. Looks like Tavi has a question.
So hypothetically, if a student came to you saying that they were really struggling with substance abuse on campus, would there be any punishment for bringing substances onto campus?
That's a great question. So here in the counseling center, we're not punitive. So we're not like we're taking the role of student conduct. So when a student comes to us seeking help, our job is to take a really non-judgmental stance and be able to support that student and be able to set goals and get them the help that they need. So there's no consequences for asking for help. And in fact, we really want to promote a campus where help-seeking behavior is encouraged.
Interesting.
Thanks for stopping by, James.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
Can you tell me your name and title?
Yes. I'm Kathy Katz. I'm an Administrative Associate and Special Projects Coordinator here at Sacred Heart University. And I'm specifically working to provide organizational support to the Collegiate Recovery Program.
Nice. Can you tell me more about Sacred Heart's Collegiate Recovery Program?
Yes. Our Collegiate Recovery Program provides support and structure to students throughout their recovery process, both students that are dealing with substance use and even mental health disorders. Okay. And the purpose of the program is to support them to be the best possible version of themselves. And so that as they go through the process of their recovery, they have that support and they can be successful in all areas of their growth, physical, mental, and spiritual.
Okay. If someone's trying to get into the collegiate program, how can they go about doing that?
So they can reach out to anyone at the Wellness Center. Brian Dolan is the Collegiate Recovery representative. And so they can reach out to him and we can give them a tour and explain the way the whole process works. I mean, the thing that we want people to know the most is that there is a support system here, mm-hmm. and that you can pursue your education while receiving support during that process. And the environment is very supportive, and there's meetings, there's fun, there's community events. So reaching out to one of the representatives, specifically Brian, would be the best way to do that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Looks like Elliot has a question.
Hey, Elliot. So I was wondering more what the collegiate recovery process looks like, if it's the same for every student or if it sort of adapts for what people need.
Well, I think the process could look differently depending on whether you're already in recovery and you're applying into Sacred Heart. Mm-hmm. So, or if you're already a student enrolled and you're entering into the recovery process. Mm-hmm. So it would depend, but either way, there is a recovery house. So there's housing that is offered to students that are in the recovery process. Mm-hmm. That would look like a meeting again with Brian Dolan. He'd give them a tour, let them know all of the supportive resources, the meetings that are on campus. So, and also bringing the families in, which is a very big part of that process, mm-hmm. so that the families can meet, see everything that's offered in the program. And again, depending on whether you're applying into Sacred Heart as a new student, coming from a recovery, or you're already an enrolled student. It might look a little bit differently, but either way, the resources that are offered are the same.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
We're so glad to have you here. Can you tell me your name and title?
Yeah, thanks for being here. It means a lot. My name's Brian Dolan. I am the Recovery Program Coordinator. I'm also a graduate of Sacred Heart University. So yeah, excited to be with you, fellow pioneer tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
For our first question, how do universities, and specifically Sacred Heart, handle student gambling on campus?
Yeah, so I mean, this is super near and dear to my heart. I'm in long-term recovery from problem gambling as well as drug and alcohol use. And I think in general, it's nothing against universities as a whole, but I would say that universities, because there's no physical symptom of gambling, it's not known. You know, it's kind of that hidden addiction. It's people are able to, you know, RAs walk by and they see it as a group of people maybe watching a football game and they think it's healthy, when a lot of times, not a lot of times, but there's more to it than that. But what I love about being at Sacred Heart University is it's not this initiative and things like this and collegiate recovery, it's not because we have higher rates here. It's that the leadership is progressive enough to know that these things happen and we want to have the infrastructure to be able to have these conversations and give services to students that need it.
How can colleges create a community that discourages gambling while still letting students feel independent?
It's a great question. I think it starts with like this type of stuff, like what your organization is doing, like just awareness that this is an issue. I think it's conversations. It's similar to what we talk a lot about in substance use, is like, if you're a college student, you have a relationship with drugs and alcohol. Right? Like you either make choices not to, you go to some parties, you drink, you know, but everyone has to make that choice. And I think like gambling goes along with that. So it's like creating, you know, we're not punitive. We're not, you know, we just want to create safe spaces to actually have these conversations. So I think it's, yeah, we want independence, but we want also our students to feel safe about opening up if they are struggling, you know?
Mm-hmm. Are there any types of like specific types of gambling that are more common among college students?
Yeah, for sure. I would say that since like 2018 and the Supreme Court and all that stuff, making states legalize gambling, the accessibility. So we see a lot of sports gambling. When I was a student here and I was gambling, it was much easier for me to keep it quiet. But then I would get like stuck where I couldn't place a bet, even though I really wanted to. But now, because of FanDuel, DraftKings, all that stuff, it's just a push of a button. Yeah, but I would say sports is very, very prevalent. You can't watch a basketball game or a football game without seeing advertisements about gambling in general. So it's, yeah.
Are there any differences in gambling patterns between like high schoolers and college students?
It's a good question. I think, I don't know so much about like patterns. I think college can be a really tough space, right? Because a couple things. A lot of times, you know, when you're talking about sports, there's a higher risk for like ex-athletes. Like I was an athlete, and then I love sports, so I, you know, gambling kept me connected to sports.
Sure.
But it's like, think about what it is to go to college, right? So it's like you're launching from your home, you know, typically, and you want, so maybe you're not playing sports anymore. You want like to make some money. You want, you know, you want more freedom.
Yeah.
So here you have like sport. I like sports. I need some more money. I want to be able to, you know, bring a girl out or do whatever. I think college can be that, like, unfortunately, that like perfect storm of when you really start to see it. And I think high schools probably have slightly better handle on it just because it's more of a structured environment.
Yeah.
You know, you have more eyeballs on you and stuff like that. So parents and, you know, so.
Speaking about parents, what should parents look out for when they think their child might have a gambling addiction?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've done a lot of work in the sports gambling specifically with like college students, both here, but a lot. I do a lot of private work outside of here with specifically sports gamblers, college age sports gamblers. And I think it's like that unhealthy relationship with sports is definitely something to look into. Like, why are you watching 8 hours of ESPN every day? just like asking for money, present, you know, having those hard boundaries with like knowing where you're, if you are giving your children money or your, you know, their the college students money, like really not being afraid of being like, where is this money going? Parents need to do that. And oftentimes, like when someone really changes, it's, and the same thing goes with substance use, is often the, for a young adult, it's often the family that makes the change first, right? Mm-hmm. So they implement boundaries, they pull the credit card. Eventually that individual might see that it's a real issue, and where it's, because if, you know, money's coming in and, you know, I'm not worried about losing money. And until my, for example, my personal story, like until my family was done bailing me out, was done getting me out of trouble, I didn't really have to, you know, worry, you know, because it's like, well, yeah, I'm in trouble with a, you know, I owe someone money, or I owe some, this person money, but it's like, hey, mom, I'm, you know, I'm in a lot of help, you know, I'm in a lot of trouble, you know, and I would start to mask it, right? So I wouldn't just say gambling, I'd use like buzzwords like depression or anxiety. And until she and my dad like kind of got like firm with the boundaries, then nothing was going to really change. So I think the parents' education is almost equally, if not more important, you know, them being, you know, knowing about how serious of an issue this is, you know?
Speaking on students, what should a student do when they realize they have a gambling problem?
If you're a college student, go to your counseling center. Obviously the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling is a great resource, like reaching out to them. I think just being honest about it. I think one of the things that's difficult is, you know, it's, the percentages are roughly around the same as substance use, in like 5 to 7% of the population just can't handle gambling safely. It's hard. It's like, if I feel like, let's say I'm in a dorm room and there's 8 guys and 7 of them know how to like kind of gamble recreationally, and then I'm the one that like, I stay up all night watching sports, or I just can't, you know, I'm not spending money on food, I'm using it gambling. It's hard. There's a lot of guilt and shame associated with it. So I think it's just like trying to get through that and realize like you're not alone. And I think once again, back to your parents' question, like addiction at any level kind of attacks the individual and the family in the same way. So like for me, it started presenting probably in like high school, but just like, I didn't want to tell people about it. My family didn't want to tell people about it. So they wanted to keep it quiet because they had guilt and shame about it. Right. So like, we have to get like away from that and saying, this is actually like a sign of like strength that you're willing to, you know, own it or talk about it and at least face it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I know you mentioned substance abuse earlier. Would you say there's a correlation between gambling and substance abuse?
Absolutely. We see high rates, and the Connecticut Council sees the same thing in the helpline. They've seen a big spike in like 18 to 24. So like the brain isn't fully developed. And so like risk-taking behavior is much more likely. Gambling hits the same part of the brain as like a stimulant, so like cocaine. And then I think it often can mask. So for me personally, like big gambling runs then increased my drug and alcohol use. That's how that correlated. But then oftentimes what we see is, let's say somebody's first starting to try to stop gambling, they might increase their substance use, right? Because it's like they're not, you know, now they can't get out of themselves by gambling. So then you might see it that way. So that's another way that they link. And then I would say lastly, you know, you feel guilt and shame. You've just lost the money that you had for textbooks, or you just lost, you know, you told your family you weren't going to do it again, and here you are. Feel guilt and shame. Maybe you run to that drink, you run to that drug. So they're super connected, you know. But I think where what's unfortunate is, because there's, back to that, the top, like there's not that physical symptom, like the medical world doesn't look at it the same way, right? So it's like gamblers often think it's like, I can just stop, right? Like I'm not hooked the way you might be like hooked to an opiate, or you might be hooked to an alcohol, or, you know, benzo. But actually like the brain, it does become a point where the brain just wants to be lit up in the same way. So you want to place that next bet and win, lose, or draw. It hits those same dopamine. So it's hard.
Yeah. So technology, I mean, the last 5 years alone, it's advanced quite a bit. How would you say technology has affected the gambling scene?
Yeah, it's crazy. So I, like I said, a lot of the people I work with are huge sports fans. They, you know, and I remember being here, and so this is like, I graduated in 2013. So I would have this like number. There was like an 800 number that, so pre like internet on my phone, mm-hmm. you know, and I would have to like call this number. So I'd be out at a party or something and I'd be calling this number all night to give me like the update on like the score of the Knicks game, you know, like mm-hmm. You'd have to call. So the access to both, obviously, like the betting, like the legalization, but then also just the access to like the sports information. So like everything now is in the palm of your hand, where like, you know, you used to bet and it was like you might not be able to watch the game, you might not be able to track the game. Now it's like all of that. So like everyone kind of points the finger to, you know, the DraftKings and all that legalization. But to me, what I'm surprised about, but I mean, it's all about ratings and money, is like sports media has really like attached to gambling. So like their programming, their, you know, their stadiums where you can place bets in the stadium. So it's like they've really, where it used to be, they knew that it was going on, mm-hmm. but they would kind of try to keep it. Because it's, you know, there can be negative implications to it all. So yeah. like they, so technology, sports, media has really increased. You know, it used to be, you know, a lot of these students, just in general, whether they, you know, have a gambling problem, but they absorb a lot more sports news than they do, like, let's say, political news or current, you know, so like mm-hmm. that increase is, I think, gone along with all this, you know.
Yeah. So for our topic for this grant, we wanted to talk a little bit about like loot boxes mm-hmm. and video games. Would you consider loot boxes a form of gambling?
I think you have to watch out. I think as a young person, you have to watch out like anything you absorb, whether we're talking about gambling, substances, Instagram, gaming, like we live in an addictive world, right? And mm-hmm. it's like, I could see it. Like I've heard those stories where like they can't stop. You know, I would say that those developers know what they're doing by, you know, the way it's shiny and, you know, get this and, you know, win more. And it's not exactly my area of expertise, but I would say that it's, it can take over just like gambling can, mm-hmm. you know?
Do you think that these like, kind of like gambling-esque features in games, do you think it's like enabling gamers into becoming a gambler?
We had running like the recovery house we've had over the years. We've had a lot of like, you know, pretty, you know, addiction is one of those things where like, we call it like changing seats in the Titanic. You know, it's like someone might struggle with alcohol and then they kind of get that under control. And then it's like, boom, all of a sudden gaming shows up or nicotine dependent shows up or, you know, too many like romantic, you know, sex can show, you know, a million different things. And I would say that, yeah, I mean, I've seen it firsthand how much, I had no idea only a couple years ago, I really realized how much like the Call of Duty and all those type of games, like how much gambling was going on in those. So I yeah. think, I do think they, you know, can enable people to gamble for sure, you know? Sure. Yeah.
So I know earlier you mentioned how gambling was legalized mm-hmm. in Connecticut. Why was it legalized? Was it like a movement? Yeah. Or?
I mean, I think a lot of it had to do, I know Chris Christie was a big component of putting it out and changing the Supreme Court in 2018. And, you know, it was interesting because at the time I got reached out to about like going up to like the Capitol and like kind of, I think one, money, right? I think it brings in a lot of money for the state. And then two, I think the idea and how they got it through is they said, well, right now gambling goes on a lot. And it's all underground. So I mean, in my worst day, I had a guy show up on campus like looking for money. You know, like so it was much more underground, mm-hmm. bookies. You know, a little bit more of a scary environment. So I think they kind of sold the idea that this is a safer way, right? Mm-hmm. But it really exposes like high schoolers and young adults because once again, that brain's not fully developed. Hey, I love sports, or hey, this is a quick way for me to make $1,000. I want these new sneakers. I want to buy a car. I want to, because we, you know, we look at money as success, and you know, so we, it's the best way I can summarize where gambling is right now, and like is like it's the oxy stage of the opiate epidemic. So I mean, smaller scale, hopefully. I mean, I think it's going to cause the deaths. We hope that did. But like, if you look back at the time, you know, pharmaceutical companies kind of like made some shady clinical trials, right? And said that you know, these are safe.
Yeah.
And then doctors were writing it kickbacks. I mean, there's a ton of information out there on that. And then everyone was, oh, this pain medicine's great. These things are great. Everything's good. And then, you know, boom, heroin, opiate epidemic. People are dying every year. And like, that's kind of where I see gambling right now. It's like, everybody's like gambling and so many people more are doing it. And it's like, we don't really, and it kind of goes in line with your technology question. It's like, technology has gone so fast that from like a psychology standpoint, we don't know. We're not far enough advanced of understanding how this is impacting society and individuals. So it's almost like very similar to gambling. It's like, it's just out there, a lot more people are doing it. And then the infrastructure of treatment compared to substance use is like much smaller. So like, one of the struggles I have more so outside of Sacred Heart with a lot of these young adults I work with is like, if I have a 21-year-old who's, you know, you struggle with alcohol, I can plug them in with a lot of people who are young, who are sober, right? But the gambling recovery community is much smaller. You know, it's just harder. Like, to really change is harder, you know, because you feel more unique when, like, we have a great young people's meeting here on campus, and it's like, I'll even send a gambler there because it's like, it's not so much about the substance or the thing. It's more just about being young and owning, you know, something you might be, you know, have an issue with.
So, yeah. So it seems like Sacred Heart has a good handling on problem gambling and gambling addiction on campus. Do you think most colleges are like this?
I would say Connecticut has done a great job because of the work of the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling. I would say that I think university leaderships, they don't fully know. No, that's so I would say Connecticut and Sacred Heart, yeah, we're confident that we're proactive. We have to be proactive about these things, not reactive. And, you know, it's not a knock about a university or a thing or a high school or organization if, you know, you're creating a culture that creates some of this stuff. It's just where we are. So
for parents that are getting ready to send their kids off to college, what should they look out for when they're trying to help their kid find the right college?
I think like a college that, you know, I must say, like, I'm so proud to be associated with Sacred Heart because they really, at every level, they care about these things. They have put so many resources, and just because it's simply mission driven and it's like the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a parent, which I'm not, I'm a fun uncle. But it's like, if I'm a parent and I'm sending my child to school right now, I want that school to be a place where they normalize these conversations and have providers on campus and people who understand that, you know, addiction's a real thing, mental health's a real thing. That's what I would be, you know, looking into.
Yeah. Before we wrap it up though, do you guys have any questions? Does the audience have anything they want to add on? Looks like Cole has a question.
Do you think that more kids are getting into gambling younger nowadays because of addictive things like, you know, social media and in-app purchases?
Yeah, great question. I think absolutely. I think technology is a major driving force to start addiction. You know, like the way I almost think about addiction is like, people want to say, what do you always see in a problem gambler? What is it about like an alcoholic? Why is it someone can handle this and someone else can't? The way that I actually think about it is like, we all inside of us have this like dimly lit like flame, right? Where it's like the right amount of trauma, the right amount of, you know, stress, social anxiety, you know, just things that go on, that flame can all of a sudden show up, and it can show up through gambling. It can show up through too much Instagram. It can show up. So it's like, we have to be like honest with ourselves and people who are close to us about this. But I think like, it's not just FanDuel and DraftKings that are trying to create people that are to become addictive, right? Like, businesses want you to become addictive. McDonald's wants me to always go to McDonald's, right? Like, Instagram. So I think it's a great point. Like, social media plays a big role in all of this.
All right. Well, that's all the questions I have for you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was awesome.
Yeah.
If you or someone you know needs help, call 1-888-789-7777.
Thank you for tuning in to the New Milford Youth Agency Podcast. Check us out on our other platforms, YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, to keep updated. See you next time.